Welcome to Federal Insights, connecting U.S. Postal Service and its future needs, sponsored by Sprint. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
What could be more Americana than the postman pulling up in a little truck or walking down the street, house by house, delivering mail? Well, times are changing. The Postal Service, like many commercial entities, is looking at delivering packages by flying drone. Does the public like that idea? The Postal Inspector General decided to find out. Joining me with results of a national survey, Jake Sofronoff, public policy analyst for the Postal IG. Jake, good to have you on.
Thank you very much for having me.
What gave root to this idea of finding out whether the public would accept what's just a normal way of delivering packages or soon to be normal?
Drone delivery is one of the issues that's gotten a lot of attention in the press over the last few years, which makes a lot of sense because it's potential for both anyone who might provide it and for consumers. But one of the interesting things about it is that it uses the public airspace. And so we thought that tracking public opinion on the issue would be important to anyone who might be interested in providing it, including the Postal Service.
And what was your methodology for gauging public opinion?
We conducted an online survey of around 1,200 18 to 75-year-old U.S. residents, as well as an additional 250 or so residents of rural areas.
And what did they tell you?
One of the interesting things that we found is that, unlike a few years ago when Jeff Bezos first identified the idea, something on the order of 75% of the people we talked to think that drone delivery would be coming within the next 5 years, and that it's a very realistic prospect. We also found that speedy delivery, so delivery within an hour, or delivery in cases of emergency, were the most interesting uses of the technology, but that the public isn't yet totally sold on the idea because they're not quite sure that they think it's safe.
They think it's not safe in terms of what? The drones, like, bumping into airplanes, crashing into their houses, or dropping their packages, or all of the above?
Their major concern was with malfunction, far more than any other item we tested. So way more than intentional misuse, for example, or theft. They just don't trust the technology yet.
Interesting. And what is the state of the Postal Service's use of drones? Is it something under active examination at this point?
We studied just the public perception of the idea, but in their response letter, which was included with the report, the Postal Service did mention that they were very interested in tracking the idea and seeing if it was something that might make sense for them operationally or economically.
Yeah, I don't think the drone industry really is completely there yet to supply what's needed. I mean, there's been some experiments, but I don't think it's anything mass scale at this point.
There's a number of different issues that are interesting in terms of the technology, but I think that most people would probably agree with that.
So it sounds as if the public fear of this is malfunction of a drone, that means it would crash or go to the wrong place, then those are not really things the Postal Service per se can necessarily control.
The only way that they could control it would be to use reliable technology. And so whether or not the technology is reliable is something that would be more on the providers of the drones. The thing that's important, though, is that people aren't going to want the service if they don't think that it is safe.
Because you asked people to rank their most trusted brand for making drone deliveries, and Amazon was the top ranked, 46% of the people ranked at top, and the Postal Service was near the bottom at 18%, but ahead of Google, 13%. Could this simply be because Amazon was the first to voice the idea that people think they're the most reliable or would be the most reliable, because wouldn't everyone be using basically the same technology?
I definitely think that that's probably the case, because the grand majority of the people who were previously aware of the idea cited Amazon as being the company they associated with the plan.
We're speaking with Jake Sofronoff. He is public policy analyst for the Postal Service's Inspector General Office. And so this is a really long report. I mean, it's a 114-page report. And how will Postal Service, do you think, inculcate this into its thinking?
Well, the approach that we took with the report is a little bit different than a lot of sort of traditional postal reports. It's more in line with what I would have done when I was in the private sector, where it is very long, but each individual section stands on its own. So someone can read the first 10 or 15 pages and understand the full scope of sort of the national overlook. And then they can look at each individual section if they're interested in a specific subgroup. So one section, for example, that would be of particular interest to the Postal Service centers on people who are frequent users of the Postal Service. And then there also looks at things like urban, suburban, rural people and genders.
And what are the big anomalies that you found there with rural and suburban?
One of the big interesting points is that people who come from urban areas were more open and interested in the idea than those who are in rural areas. But it might be that those who are in rural areas would have the greatest benefit because they could get increases to their level of service through using drone delivery.
And I would think that drone delivery, at least to me, it sounds like it would be a more dangerous proposition in urban areas than out in the open.
The FAA and other groups would definitely seem to agree with that.
I mean, imagine a drone carrying a six-pack of beer in glass bottles crashing into your window.
Right. And the way that the laws are currently set, you know, urban areas are very hard to run a drone in. You can't even, for the most part, run a recreational drone even anywhere around the D.C. area.
Sure. And another finding I thought interesting is that you measured what the effect of drone delivery on brand positivity would be. And it looks like the Postal Service's brand positive perception would decrease after using drones, but as it would for everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. But the interesting thing is just what you were saying there at the end. It goes down for pretty much everyone. I think that the main takeaway from that right now is that people just don't trust the service. So one of the really interesting takeaways, I think, is that even among people who like drone delivery, just 60% thought that it would be safe. And if you have that large of a boundary, I think anyone who offers it right now, there's going to be a little bit of a trust barrier.
So there's a little bit of a Luddite, I guess, mentality among the public that's going to be the recipient of this wonderful new delivery system.
I think that it's reasonable to want to be convinced if something is going to be flying overhead. You know, the use of the public airspace, I think, is really that's why public opinion is so important on this issue.
So in many ways, what happens is very dependent on, say, the FAA, which is the agency charged with coming up with rules for how all this will work.
Definitely true. And I think that there's a little bit of a feedback loop where they don't want to approve it until people are convinced that it's safe. And people aren't going to be convinced that it's safe until they start to see the technology a little bit more.
So maybe the lesson for the Postal Service is if you go ahead with this, make sure you do it really, really well.
And make sure that people are comfortable with it when you do it. So what I would say a large takeaway would be anyone who's thinking about offering drone delivery, make sure that you all work together to be sure that the technology is in fact safe and that people understand that it's safe.
Who knows, maybe the drones could have some sort of a zapper that could get those biting dogs and really help the postal carriers.
I don't think that that's something that the Postal Service would be putting in.
I don't think they're contemplating that one.
Zapping dogs.
No. Any reaction, seriously, from the postal authorities on the delivery side to this report yet?
There is a letter at the end of the report, as there are with all Office of Inspector General reports, where they give their response. And in that letter, they talk about being keenly interested in the idea, but that it needs to make economic and operational sense.
Well, really interesting report. Jake Sofronoff is a public policy analyst at the Postal Service Inspector General. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me. If anyone would like to read the full report or even just the first 10 to 15 pages to get the idea, they can go to uspsoig.gov.
Check out those results. We'll put a link to them at federalnewsradio.com, where we'll also link to this interview. I'm Tom Temin.
Employees, retirees, and contractors for the United States Postal Service. After handling all that mail and heavy parcels, Sprint would like to make one bill a little lighter. The United Freedom Plan from Sprint costs even less because of where you work. Get two lines for $90 per month and up to 10 additional lines for only $25 per line. No more worrying about running out of data or surprise overage charges. Get unlimited data, talk, and text all while on the Sprint network. Restrictions apply. Learn more at a local Sprint store or visit sprint.com/USPS discounts.
Long before the internet, the United States had a network connecting every home in every hamlet. It's called the Postal Service. It has a richer history of innovation and technology than many people realize. The first new history of USPS in 50 years has just been published. Neither Rain Nor Snow author Devin Leonard joins me now. Mr. Leonard, great to have you on.
Hey, Don.
Tell us what prompted you to write a book about the Postal Service, which everyone else seems to be criticizing a lot these days, especially Congress.
Well, I was assigned to do a story about it, and it was the cover story of Bloomberg Businessweek magazine, where I'm a staff writer, in 2011. And I found out that the U.S. Postal Service delivers, more than 40% of the world's mail, and at the same time, it's going broke. So the piece got a lot of attention, and that led to, that raised a lot of questions, in my mind. And among other things, what I found out was that people malign the Postal Service now, but for years and years, Americans were sort of amazed and looked at the Postal Service with wonder. So I want, that's really what prompted me to do the book.
And in some ways, the wonder that people felt, the cause of the wonder, really is still there, because they have so many more addresses that they reach every single day without fail than there were 100 years ago or 10 years ago.
Well, that's the issue, Tom, is that every year there's a million more addresses, and at the same time, the mail is disappearing. In the last decade, the volume's gone down by 30%. So what that means is that it costs more and more and more to deliver a letter, because letter carriers are going to every house with fewer things in their mailbag.
So if you look at the classic first-class letter, then they're in a sort of death spiral, because the more expensive it gets per piece, the more they have to charge, and the more they charge, maybe the less people would be likely to mail a letter.
Well, the one thing, or the one caveat I have there is that the Postal Service, the U.S. Postal Service, is also the world's cheapest mail delivery service. And actually, they just lowered their rates by 2 cents. Spain used to be cheaper to send a letter in Spain than in the U.S., but no longer. But if you go to Denmark, it's about $1.50, and even in England, it's about 80 cents. So I would think that you probably could raise prices a little bit, and that would take care of a lot of problems, but then that raises all sorts of legislative issues.
Well, they have a postal rate commission, so they can't just arbitrarily do anything with the rates. It was the commission that took away that 2 cents, I think, right?
Yeah, it is, and they have a little bit of leeway. They're allowed to raise rates within the consumer price index, or the inflation rate, but given how quickly the mail is disappearing, and also the amount of their fixed costs, which keep going up, I guess that really doesn't help them that much. Just being able to being sort of harnessed to the inflation rate.
In your research, what do you make of the fact that Congress tried to reorganize the Postal Service a number of years ago? If anything, it's sort of like Amtrak. They say it's not a federal agency, but yet everything it does has to be approved by Congress. Was that a mistake? Should that be revisited, that whole structure?
I don't think it should be revisited per se, but I do think it there's a lot of interesting things when you look at the past and the present, and for years and years the Postal Service was a patronage mill, and of course people today think that that's terrible, but also the Postmaster General sat in the president's cabinet, and he was very often the president's, campaign manager. James Farley is a good example of that. He was FDR's Postmaster General, and he was also, head of the Democratic, the senatorial committee. So he was handing out jobs at the same time he was delivering the mail, and that enabled, the Postmaster General to get a lot of things done and have his way a lot without the patronage system. The Postal Service got independence, but they don't have much power on Capitol Hill, and that's causing a lot of problems for them now.
And also, you write a lot about the technology of the Postal Service, which I think people maybe overlook, because they see trucks and men and women in them sticking things by hand into mailboxes. But there's a lot more to it than that.
Well, the Postal Service has always been at sort of the bleeding edge of of technology. Whether if you go way back, the stagecoach in the late 18th century, that was considered to be a great technological advance, and then steamboats and trains and things like that. But I think what you're referring to, and I think what a lot of people don't know, is that in the 50s the Postal Service developed the optical character reader, which was which enabled them to sort of make mail sorting machines that could read addresses. Initially, that's what the zip code was created for. It was machines could read these codes. They couldn't read handwriting yet, but that enabled basically the Postal Service to introduce sort of automation to the mail sorting system. Before that, it was everybody sorting letters by hand like they'd done back in Ben Franklin's time. But and from all around the world, people came to the U.S. Postal Service and they sort of marveled at that technology and they tried to adopt it. The tragedy is that it took decades for the Postal Service to actually institute that that technology in all its post offices because I mean this is the world's largest mail carrier and the whole program was underfunded and it took forever. So even though the Americans developed it, Americans didn't really get the benefit of it for a long time.
Devin Leonard is author of the book Neither Rain Nor Snow: A New History of the U.S. Postal Service. I'm Tom Temin.
USPS employees, during this busy holiday season, Sprint has a special offer just because of where you work. Save $5 every month for every line you have on their already amazing Unlimited Freedom plan. 4 lines for $35 per month each. For a family of 4 lines, that's a savings of $20 per month. No more worrying about running out of data or surprise overage charges. Get unlimited data, talk, and text all while on the Sprint network. Restrictions apply. Learn more at a local Sprint store or visit sprint.com/USPS discount.
We're speaking with Devin Leonard, author of Neither Rain Nor Snow, the first, I guess, in 50 years history of the Postal Service. And they also tried some things that didn't work out so well, like picking up mailbags from airplanes with hooks dragging on the ground, which are kind of dangerous and so forth. What are some of the misfires that you saw in the history?
The irony, and I guess you can sort of debate, Tom, about whether or not this is a misfire, but they were certainly too early to the internet. I mean, everybody thinks, the Postal Service blew it. The private sector developed email, and then by the time the public adopted it, the Postal Service was too late. But they actually had sort of a hybrid email system that they introduced in the early 80s called Ecom, and it basically. Companies would send mail either electronically or on sort of big sort of magnetic tapes to the Postal Service, and then the Postal Service would transmit it electronically around the country. Clerks would print out the letters, and letter carriers would deliver them. But they ran into problems with the Postal Rate Commission, which wanted to, which introduced its own or sort of forced the Postal Service to adopt sort of an alternative system, which was about twice as expensive. The tech industry sort of went nuts, and essentially the whole thing crashed and burned. But what that meant was that for another decade, the Postal Service was sort of gun shy of doing anything with electronic mail. And they tried again in the 90s, but at that point, email had really sort of come in, and it was kind of too late. A lot of resistance again, but the point is that these programs didn't work. But it's kind of amazing that the Postal Service saw electronic mail coming. They tried to do something. They were too early, but they didn't ignore it. They didn't sleep. They didn't sleep on it.
And also, they have a big numismatic end of things, the whole stamp end of the business. And that's been quite an area of development and ferment, too, correct?
Yeah. The fascinating thing is that there were no stamps until the 1840s. Basically, the English adopted them first. For the longest time, people just went to the post office. They gave they clerked their letter. The Postal Service sent it to another post office, and then say if I was sending one to you, Tom, you'd come and you'd pay for it. And sometimes you'd look at the letter, you'd say, "Oh, I don't want Devin's letter," so you wouldn't pick it up. And so that's why the Postal Service had a big dead letter operation. But it wasn't until the 1840s when finally the post office said, "Hey, forget about that. Let's use stamps. Let's make Devin pay for it. So it's not going to be on Tom. Tom won't be able to give the letter back to us and sort of reject it. So we'll get paid up front."
So if someone offers you an 1829 stamp, don't buy it.
No, don't take it. That's definitely a fake.
All right. And so just to wrap this up, what did you find the most compelling about this wonderful network that we have called the Postal Service?
Well, I just think it's amazing that the Postal Service is everywhere. Its trucks are everywhere. It's not as many mailboxes as there used to be, but there sure are a ton of them. And once you, there's a post office, in every downtown. Once you're sort of aware of it, and once you start looking around, it's a big system that everybody ignores, and people don't think it's as important as it used to be. But but it's still enormous. It's still everywhere. And, you know, we all want our Amazon packages, and the Postal Service is delivering those, and it's delivering them on Sundays now. So, the more you get into it, the more you see it, the more fascinating it becomes.
Devin Leonard is author of the book Neither Rain Nor Snow, A New History of the U.S. Postal Service. Thanks so much for joining me.
No, thanks for having me.
Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive and click Share with Friends. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Federal Insights, connecting U.S. Postal Service at its Future Needs Month. Sponsored by Sprint on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.